I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast. Gary Trust, Billboard's co-director of charts.
And hey guys, it's Trevor Anderson, a chart manager here at Billboard.
This is where we look at why what's on the charts is on the charts. Welcome back. Lots on the podcast to get to this week. Big week for Drake streaming wise. One of the biggest streaming weeks ever for God's Plan. So we're going to get into all that. Drake streams and where he is in the Billboard Hot 100. Plus, Bebe Rexha makes history on the Hot Country Songs chart. And she's in the top 10 of the Hot 100. And as she's on Warner Brothers Records, she's going to be a focus of our industry insider interview this week. We're going to chat with Mike Sherwood from Warner Brothers about a bunch of the label's acts that are doing really well right now. Bebe Rexha, Dua Lipa, Blockboy JB, all top 10 hits lately. Macklemore is doing really well. So that's coming up. Before we get to that, I just want to draw a little extra attention to a song that maybe in some ways, Trevor, is more important than any song we're going to talk about chart-wise. Give a listen to this song. It's called Shine.
You threw my city away. You tore down the walls and opened up all the gates. You ruined this town. The bridges and you slowly let us drown. But you're not gonna knock us down. We'll get back up again. You may have heard.
All right, so if you're not familiar with that song, it was performed last week at the end of the CNN Town Hall by the Stoneman Douglas Drama Club. And just a music tie-in, obviously, we're interested in Billboard, but how amazing. These students who were speaking on CNN, taking on politicians and people at the NRA, and never mind how eloquent they were just in their questions and comments, but to have a song ready to go that they wrote and performed as if they'd been performing that for so long. It was so polished. Afterwards, people on Twitter were saying that this needs to be the number one song in the country. It needs to be recorded. It needs to be put on iTunes as a benefit single. I just, on top of everything that those students have been saying, I thought it was extra impressive. They got a song on top of it, too.
Yeah, I think really the entire country, if not the entire world, has really been amazed and impressed with what these teens have been able to do in the weeks after we saw this horrific incident down in Parkland, Florida. And I mean, you're right, for obviously some of the kids, I think, who have been who feel more confident in speaking and more confident in debating have been taking on those roles, particularly in a lot of the press conferences or in the media or even on Twitter. And you know, what a great way for another group of kids, some of them who may not feel as comfortable speaking outright or in front or, you know, I mean, attacking the president or such, to use their talents as well in a different way to bring a good sense of community and hopefulness. Because obviously, You know, as people should, and I think people can agree, you know, why they understand there's frustration, there's anger, there's resentment, there's bitterness about how and why this all went down. But, I mean, also, you know, there's a lot of grief and confusion and feeling of hopelessness. And for this song and those kids to address that and be able to take that on head on is just, I mean, incredible.
Yeah, the message of the song and the lyrics, we're tired of hearing that we're too young to ever make a change, is what they're saying. And it feels like they're not at all too young. It feels like their message is certainly being heard in a way that we really haven't heard before. And I think it's just obviously touching people because it's so from the heart. It's so pure emotion and coming from a place of logic against people who've been in the political machine for decades in many cases. And I think that's why it's so endearing.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, to that point about being too young to make a difference, I think that's one of the great things about this is I've seen so many people, former President Barack Obama in particular was really championing how we've always seen youth and young kids, you know, drive revolutions. I mean, not to get too deep, but, you know, in like basically all of world history, you know, it's never really started from the top down. I mean, it's really been kids demanding change. And, you know, it's great to see that this one is something that that this event is something that is really, you can really get the real sense that they're willing to go all the way no matter how long it takes. You know, they will not let this sort of settle into the back burner and become business as usual. And I mean, again, just how can you not be moved and inspired? And I mean, even, you know, no matter what side of the debate that you're on, I mean, just I think we can all appreciate the enthusiasm and the intensity that these kids are bringing to that. I mean, that's something we've been sort of talking about, grappling as a country for a couple of years, if not a decade now, about how the youth seem so, how they're just apathetic and they don't really care about anything and they don't have any attachments besides, you know, your cell phone and Chick-fil-A or whatever. And to see them putting their energy towards something that they really believe in is
that what the kids focused on, Chick-fil-A nowadays? Is that what life's about?
I'll tell you, man, back in high school we used to love Chick-fil-A. It wasn't like we ate it every day, but
I'd actually really like to see an all-star version of the song recorded. The message obviously is so important, but how cool would it be to take the song that was just written within the last couple weeks or so? So many acts. If any label people are listening, I put that out there. I think this could be a great benefit single.
Got to be enough of them actively supporting this cause. I mean, good luck on getting all the arrangements together, but you never know.
Yeah, for charity, it can happen. So I know Billboard's looking into that a little bit deeper.
Gary, for that executive producer credit. Listen at this.
I just think it's a great message. So happy to put that out there. And yeah, music can do its small part. Maybe it's maybe not so small to remind us what's good at a time when news is anything but that. Let's get to this week's top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100.
stops playing.
And number one.
I hold back sometimes I won't. Yeah. I feel good sometimes I don't. I finesse down Western Road. Might go down to G-O-D. Yeah.
And bringing us out for a fifth week, if you're keeping score at home, that is Drake and the song God's Plan. So much has been said about God's Plan in the past month here on the podcast. And believe it or not, we have even more for you. Historic week this week in terms of streaming. Last week, we mentioned when we knew that the video was going to be out and have its first 7 days in one tracking week, which is this week, if the song could hit the 100 million weekly US streams mark. And no surprise, it did. Drake blowing past that with 101.7 million streams, which is the second highest total ever recorded in Nielsen Music history. Just a hair under Harlem Shake by Bauer, just about 5 years ago.
It was exactly 5 years ago to the chart week, for what that's worth.
Now, those streams are actually massive enough that if the song were just getting in streaming points, it still would have topped the Hot 100 this week. But leave it to Drake to not only do that, but also be the top-selling song of the week this week, pulling 81,000 downloads. So he's got the number one streamer, the number one seller, and very possibly could be number one at radio sometime in the near future. The song moves into the top 10 of the radio songs chart this week, jumping up five spots, number 13 last week, up to number 8. And, I mean, the song's building incredibly well at urban radio, basically topping all of the R&B or hip-hop airplay charts that we have here at Billboard. Pop radio getting on board as well. I mean, there's only 7 more spots to go, and the way this thing's been moving up, just, you know, and taking over everything it touches, I mean, very possibly could be a number one radio hit in the future, even though it doesn't feel like it has this big radio sound to it.
Yeah, it's moving quickly. So that's the final piece at this point of the puzzle. It's got the streams, it's got the sales, now radio is really kicking in. It's the number one gainer in all three metrics, streaming, airplay, and sales this week. Kind of interesting that it does that while in its fifth week at number one. Usually songs that make these gains are fairly at the very beginning of their chart lives. And in a way, this is. It's only 5 weeks old. They've just all been at number one on the Hot 100. So look back, just kind of an interesting stat, I thought, that the last song to be the greatest gainer in all metrics on the Hot 100 in its fifth week, at least number one on the Hot 100 or later. We got to go back again just about 5 years. Blurred Lines. And that was in its ninth week at number one, and it was the week that the Blurred Lines album by Robin Thicke came out. So same kind of thing. The video this week gives it that boost. That week it was the album. So it just kind of shows that you can be number one for a while and then still have another catalyst that'll kick in and keep a song going even further.
Yeah, and as you can imagine, with Drake having such a massive lead, impressively in streams more than anything, is a long way to fall between number one and number two. And so it seems like, you know, even if Drake can't match the streaming total, which would probably be unlikely in the next couple of weeks, I mean, the way this thing's moving at radio, it's still selling very strongly. And with numbers 2, 3, and 4, which are Ed Sheeran's Perfect, Bruno Mars and Cardi with Finesse, and Camila Cabello's Havana, all starting to slide back. Those songs have kind of, seems like they've hit their peak and are moving back down the chart. Not much to challenge it. God's Plan could be number one for the long haul.
Yeah, it could come down to what new music is out. We know there's new Post Malone music. There's new Logic. It could be something at this point that just isn't on the chart at this point.
Yeah, I will say the Post Malone song. I mean, Spotify is only, of course, one metric that goes into the chart, but today, I noticed, which is Tuesday, that Psycho, the new song from Post Malone with Ty Dolla $ign, got more streams on Spotify yesterday than God's Plan. Yeah. God's Plan have really been dwarfing everything for the past couple of weeks, so Post can mount a challenge as well. The song's been selling well on iTunes, could be the top-selling song of the week next week. Won't have, as you can expect, you know, the massive radio play that Drake's song has, so he'll be kind of losing in that category. But we saw the damage that Post Malone did with Rockstar when it came out at the end of last year. Ended up having 8 weeks at number one. So, I mean, at this point, you know that Post probably has his sights on that top spot again, and they'll be gunning for it.
For now, for Drake, a couple ways to look at really how big the domination is this week for God's Plan. The point difference. So songs, there's a formula in the Hot 100, streams, airplay, sales, all translates to points. If you were to add the points of the number two and number three song, Perfect and Finesse, it has more points than number two and three combined. And if you've done the research too, Trevor, on this, it has a more than 2-to-1 points lead over Perfect. So that's just absolutely huge. It's one of, what'd you find? Only 20 songs in the Hot 100's last 25 years since the Hot 100 has been using Nielsen music data to have a 2-to-1 points lead, which is just so huge at number one.
Yeah, we're talking songs that were massive, like last year, Shape of You by Ed Sheeran at one point, on top of Bad and Bougie, songs like I Will Always Love You by Whitney Houston, Boy Is Mine, Brandy Monica, just some songs, you know, that everyone knows that were massive hits, long-lasting hits, and just, of course, cultural staples, really, at this point. So the fact that it's able to pull a 2-to-1 lead lends itself really well to a long Hot 100 future. A lot of the songs that have done this 2-to-1 points lead have gone on to rule for close to double digits, if not double digits. So, you know, Drake's got to be feeling pretty good getting that massive an achievement in a week.
Okay, other history this week on the Billboard charts, we should point out a song we heard back at number 8, Bebe Rexha and Florida Georgia Line with Meant to Be, number 1 on the Hot Country Songs chart for a 13th week. Ties history. So a couple weeks ago, it got its 11th week at number 1. That passed Taylor Swift's We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together for the most weeks at number 1 ever on Hot Country Songs for song by solo female. This week, ties the overall female record, 13 weeks at number 1. The only other song featuring lead female vocals to do that was this song.
I got a girl crush. Hate to admit it, but I got a heart rush. It's slowing down.
Little Big Town Girl Crush a couple years ago, 13 weeks at number 1 on Billboard's Hot Country Songs chart in 2015. So that's now tied with Meant to Be, Bebe Rexha, Florida Georgia Line for longest leading number 1 country hit featuring female vocals.
And for fortune tellers out there looking ahead to if it can break the record next week, signs probably pointing pretty good.
Saying it's meant to be? You're trying not to say that.
I was definitively avoiding it, but yes, some might say it's meant to be.
All right. Let's talk more about that song. Let's find out things that are going on, all things in Warner Brothers Records. So that song's on Warner Brothers. Song we heard at number 5, Look Alive by Block Boy JB featuring Drake, also on Warner Brothers. If we expand it to number 11 this week, Dua Lipa is there with New Rules after hitting the top 10 on the Hot 100. She's on Warner Brothers. So we're going to talk about those artists. As we said, Macklemore as well. Let's get into so many things about Warner Brothers. We've got the label's Mike Sherwood here on the Billboard Sharpie Podcast.
I don't mean to be so uptight, but my heart's been hurt a couple times by a couple guys that didn't treat me right. I ain't gonna lie, I ain't gonna lie, cause I'm tired of the fake love. Show me what you made.
Mike from Warner Brothers Records.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Thanks so much for joining us in the Billboard Sharpie Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So, Mike, we've had guys who are focused on promoting to radio. Your position is a little bit different. Why don't you just explain what it is actually you do for Warner Brothers?
Yeah, well, I have a not-so-sexy title in the area of, I'm the vice president of what we call commercial revenue and accounts, but I like to just dumb it down and say that I oversee the day-to-day of sales and streaming. So me and my team work with the biggest accounts that everybody's heard of, like Spotify and Apple and Amazon, but all the way down to the little mom-and-pop independent record stores all across the country. So at everything in between.
So I'm guessing your job day to day has really changed as streaming has just gone to just absolutely huge levels and it keeps getting bigger.
Yeah, it's you know, it's been an interesting ride to be on this side of the business, coming up through the business for the last 20 years, to kind of see the rise and fall of the CD, and now the rise and fall of the download, and now just the incredible meteoric rise of the stream has made for a very interesting career. And with streaming comes so much data and so much learning that it's making us you know, smarter and more effective than we've ever been as an industry in terms of figuring out how to read records and, you know, chase the right songs and the right hits and, you know, hopefully turn them into global smashes.
Do you feel that music at this point is more in the hands of the consumer? Because years ago, it was kind of the label would say, this is what we're putting out and this is what you get. Nowadays, it's a lot more everything's out there and there's more consumers saying, this is what we want to hear.
Yeah, it's an interesting time, you know. Obviously, having the essentially the history of popular recorded music available at one click of a mouse or one press of a button, you know, makes things very different than it's been over the past 40 or 50 years in the business. But what we found is that unless there is a specific bit of curation that leads people to some of this stuff, it's hard for people to kind of figure out where to start. And they tend to lean in on the things that they know and that they love, which is obviously a normal human behavior in general. But, you know, it's still quite challenging, even though they have everything at their fingertips to be able to listen to anything at any time. It's actually made it challenging in many different ways that that selling CDs and even selling downloads didn't in the past. Getting through to consumers today in an attention span deprived generation, you know, makes it a very interesting approach for all of us that get to sit on the front lines every day trying to figure out how to get inside of people's ears and into their heads.
Any thoughts on the potential disappearing of the CD? We've heard some big box retailers getting rid of it going forward. Is that something that scares you, or that's what music is? It's always changing, and it's a label's job to adapt to that.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a little bit of a lot of those things. You know, I don't think we should actively participate in the demise of any particular format unless the consumer is actually telling us that it's no longer needed or no longer warranted. So, you know, it's understandable state of the business that something physical in this specific conversation, CD, is going the way of the buffalo, but it's often contradicted by the rise of vinyl at the same time. And you know, there's still, it's still a large, you know, business when you look at it holistically, where close to 100 million CDs were sold in the United States last year. But that will continue to decline. I think there will always be a market for things that are kind of tangible and people that enjoy the physical aspect of, you know, consuming music. But obviously that's going to continue to shift. You know, interestingly, the download is actually decreasing at rates higher than the physical CD ever has. And that's obviously primarily just the people that were already in the digital space adopting streaming and moving over much more quickly than they did from the physical to digital space.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you buy 10 downloads, you might as well, you can have a month of Spotify and then have those six songs and more.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think it's there's a large part of like the kind of human behavior portion of it where you're already kind of familiar being in that digital space. You know, if you've been buying downloads for 7 or 8 years or 10 years, however long, it's not hard for you to get your head around the idea of, oh, I can pay a flat rate of $10 a month and now I can listen to anything at any time, anywhere I want to listen to it. So I think it's a little bit easier for that kind of digital consumer to make that jump. Just like we saw where, you know, it took a minute for people that were longtime physical buyers to really move into the download space. So I think you'll continue to see a migration of both those configurations moving all towards streaming.
And given your position, Mike, you had to be happy. At the end of last year was the first time we'd seen growth in revenue in the music business in a long time after years of downturns. And again, streaming driving that.
Yeah, it's again, it's a very exciting time to be on this side of the business and in being in the business in general. It's really breathe a new life into to the business, and again, it's really kind of forced us to drive new strategies on how we're impacting people to where they want to consume more and more of our music specifically. But as an industry as a whole, it's, you know, getting into a room, you know, for the past 10 years, there was always a bit of doom and gloom as to, you know, oh, business is tough, and oh, this is where we're heading, and what are we going to do? And you can certainly feel in the past couple of years when you get into those same room, you quickly feel that level of optimism, and there's definitely an air of hope, and we're all kind of in an arms race to figure out, you know, what mechanisms and levers that you can pull to really get people to, instead of listening to your song one or two times, listening to it 50 to 100 times and really helping to drive that revenue.
I was going to say this, to use a really bad pun, it kind of feels like probably these are good old days at Warner Brothers right now with all the hits you guys are having, with three top tens recently in the top 10 all at the same time. It was the first time that Warner Brothers had done that in 4 years. So on top of streaming, everything going so well, Warner Brothers itself are having a nice high point right now, Mike.
Yeah, you know, it's an exciting time to be at Warner Brothers. You know, we implemented a strategic strategy middle to beginning of last year, where we realized, you know, this is a great historic label. You can walk through the halls here and you can see all the incredible images of artists that have adorned Warner's halls through many, many years and many decades. And we realized that, you know, we weren't exactly strategically positioned to take advantage of the current streaming boom. So that required an investment in A&R and a shift at our highest level of the company in terms of bringing in a new chairman. And it's really reinvigorated the label. And that's being evidenced right now on the charts. It's an exciting time to be able to say that we have three songs inside of the Hot 100 top 10.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's an exciting time to be here. That's for sure.
Who do you see on the walls when you walk all through the office?
Oh, man. Obviously, Prince, you see him looking at you. It seems like every corner you turn around, he's somewhere. Yeah. But you see Talking Heads, and you see Fleetwood Mac, and, I mean, just obviously legends of not just Warner Brothers, but music in general, and certainly artists that had an impact on pop culture. It's a pretty special place to be able to walk through and see that history kind of looking right back at you. And, you know, it really does inspire you to want to be able to have the next chapter of that incredible history. It's a 60-year anniversary of Warner Brothers this year, so it makes you really, you know, give pause and kind of reflect on your role, and while you're looking back, it's incredibly important to be looking forward at, you know, future stars like Dua Lipa and Bebe Rexha and the myriad of other artists that we're in the middle of developing and sharing with the world right now.
Yeah, let's get into some of these artists that are doing so well right now. Let's start with Bebe because of her record week this week on the Hot Country Songs chart we mentioned before. If you saw the stat, Mike, 13 weeks at number one on the Hot Country Songs chart. That ties Girl Crush by Little Big Town for the longest leading Hot Country Songs number one ever featuring female vocals. Pretty crazy to think. Even Bebe herself has said, you know, she's a girl from New York. She's surprised that she's having all this country success.
I mean, it is just absolutely a phenomenal story. And when you look and you kind of start to trace Bebe's history, is she has actually a very strong and rich history with being on all kinds of different songs, whether she's a feature or a lead vocalist, where she's worked in the, you know, the hip hop space with 2 Chainz and Gucci Mane. And some of her biggest collaborations were with G-Eazy, which was obviously a hip hop song as well. But she's also had tremendous amount of success in the dance kind of EDM space with Martin Garrix and a track on this current EP with Cranium. So it's It's amazing to see the level of success she's now having in the country space. Obviously, that's helped along greatly by such big stars such as Florida Georgia Line. But it really kind of falls in line with where her career has been, is that she's been able to kind of cut across multiple genres and find great levels of success in each of those genres. So it's really an amazing story. It really is.
What comes next for BB? How do you take the success of this song and, as you said, all these different songs she's had in different genres, first LP? Do you feel like at this point you kind of need to maybe focus her towards one genre? Or is it like we're seeing with a lot of artists, there are fewer barriers nowadays. People can do different sounds. They can bounce around from different genres. That maybe that's just as good as putting out one specific sound and tying yourself to that.
Yeah, you know, ultimately, I think it's part of who BB is, right? So, and to your point, and to the conversation of streaming, I think in this day and age where things are just a click away, that, you know, there's no reason to kind of pigeonhole an artist if that's an area that they want to go to, is to do a feature with an up and coming hip hop artist. Great, go for it. Country lane, great, go for it. And obviously, in her main lane of pop. So I think what the next step is, you know, we took a more music, more often approach, which was a very streaming centric approach in 2017. Instead of having one body of work, we opted to work multiple singles that led into 6-song EPs. That way we were developing the artist and the fan base and giving them more music more often. You know, with the success of Meant to Be, that's actually been able to position us to allow BB to create her first fully realized album. And that's really going to be the next step here, is now bringing to market a whole new set of songs that I think helps kind of legitimize her as an album artist and not just a singles to single to single to singles artist. So we're excited to get ready to announce that in the near future, that, you know, she's been working diligently on a new body of work that's going to cross multiple genres once again.
Yeah, she told Billboard that she was working not necessarily with other country artists, but with some country songwriters as part of what she's doing next.
Yeah, you know, the great thing about BB is she really will work from that A&R perspective with anybody that she has a connection with, and I think she's obviously a very sharp songwriter herself. The majority of those hits that, even though they were potentially or performed by other acts like G-Eazy or even the Eminem song Monster, those were penned by BB. So she has a lot of success in that songwriting arena on her own and working with others. So I think, again, to her credit, she's savvy enough to recognize that working with writers from all genres can really translate into incredible success, including a 13-week number one country song.
Let's move on to Dua Lipa, just out of the top 10 this week, but a nice run in the top 10. This is one of the more interesting stories of the last year or so, because you're talking about a really slow and steady build. The song was number one in the UK about 6 months ago, and then took that long to get to the top 10. Really slow and steady build on the Hot 100. Was it dedication? Is it her talent? A little bit of everything? At what point did you realize, when the song was so big overseas, you might have something at some point for the U.S.?
Yeah, the Dua stories are a really interesting one. You know, they started over in the UK essentially, I think, middle of 2015. And, you know, we got involved at the end of 2016 or maybe the middle of 2016. And we actually took a couple of singles to U.S. radio, kind of with varying degrees of success, but nothing that really had broken through. And, you know, again, following the kind of UK's lead, because they were having a tremendous amount of success with her in the UK and in Europe, you know, we released released the her debut album in June of last year. And, you know, what was interesting is because we had just tried a couple of songs at radio, we hadn't really identified another song, and we were definitely going to kind of take the wait-and-see approach. We were invested in Dua. We were very excited about her. We had seen this tremendous career growth happening in other parts, and even here in the States with some touring that she had done. She was selling out venues here. But we had yet to kind of hit that song that really connected with people. And what separated New Rules was we went out and we made arguably a very good video. It really, you know, showcased who she was, and it really helped bring the song and the lyrics to life. And what's very interesting is the album came out in the first week of June. The video for New Rules was released in the first week of July. And from the moment that the video premiered, it absolutely took off. The song just went to a completely other place and another level, and it actually made our job, while still doing a lot of work and a lot of heavy lifting, made our job much easier, because all of a sudden we had very tangible, like, data that showed, hey, in the first week of this video, you know, there was an over 500% increase in track consumption here in the United States. And when you can kind of go to your partners, whether it's at Spotify or Apple or Amazon or whomever it is, and illustrate for them that organically people came into their service and that they consume this in a major way, man, it was like the first domino of hundreds that were about to fall. Before we knew it, by the end of that first week, we found ourselves in Today's Top Hits over at Spotify. We found ourselves in A-List Pop over at Apple. And it was just off to the races from there on out. And it did take a lot of what you referred to. It took a lot of focus. It took a lot of, you know, rolling up the sleeves and making people believers that this was the song that was going to put her over. And I know our radio team, man, came up against a lot of hard and heavy walls, but ultimately broke through them, because the song just kept showing that it was a hit. And not every song does that, and not every song can stick around for 6 months while radio continues to build and build. But it was an amazing kind of coordinated effort over a 6 and 7 month period to be able to deliver a global smash. You know, what's really interesting about the video, to put it, you know, into context, is that they just announced last week she is the youngest female artist ever to hit 1 billion views on a video on YouTube. It was really, truly the catalyst that helped drive the success. And then the streaming story really helped pile on. And then radio came in.
Yeah, huge hit of pop radio. I actually kind of chuckle now when I hear the song. It's crossing over to AC radio, the You Ain't Getting Over Him lyric on AC radio. I think it's kind of funny that people maybe hear the New Rules part, they hear the chorus, they hear her counting down stuff. Maybe that lyric kind of slips past PDs or listeners a little bit, but just kind of shows how big the song is if you can even get that lyric on adult radio.
Yeah, absolutely. It's certainly a message song, and it's a message that obviously seems very timely with all that's going on in the U.S. culture right now. And it is kind of ironic that a lyric like that kind of have snuck through. But, you know, the irony of that is we have our follow-up single called IDGAF, which again, we dropped a video in the early part of January, and we've seen already incredible large response to it. And the radio guys that are out right now working at radio and already have, you know, dozens and dozens of stations on it. And we think this one's going to move very quickly as well. So I think the 2018 is going to be a very, very bright year for Dua. And that's really saying something coming out of 2017.
Yeah, one of the cool things, too, about Dua, and that people may have realized in the past couple of weeks, is that it's pretty hard, it seems like nowadays, to break a new pop artist into the highest parts of streaming, of the charts. I mean, we see a lot of these hip-hop songs taking up so much real estate at the top of the chart, and, you know, maybe an Ed Sheeran or somebody, you know, with several albums under their belt can get into that space. But what's it like trying to work a new pop artist into a sphere that is just so streaming hip-hop dominated at this point?
Yeah, you know, it is challenging because if you look, there's exactly what you've described. It seems like there is a new, you know, pop artist coming out every week. And this is where I think the real kind of the global story of streaming really comes into play, as they were really developing and building a very nice story outside of the United States. It was something that when you go to an account or a partner like Spotify and they look in their system, they're looking at a global view. They're not necessarily just looking at the U.S. view. And when they go in to see these things, they see, okay, well, there's something very real happening here. And what exactly is it? And that gives us the kind of the perfect lever to go and push harder for more streaming and more focus. But to your point, what makes her stand out? I mean, ultimately, it's easy to say now because we're all seeing it, but she's absolutely a star. She had made a great debut record and had multiple songs that worked in other territories. But I think there's something to be said about the creative of that video that kind of set her apart, that took her out of that kind of developing lane and put her onto the fast track of being somebody that people could relate to, that they were excited about, and ultimately needed to listen to more of. And, you know, I think all those little pieces kind of added up. And again, like we just mentioned, I think the song itself, because of what's happening in culture and society right now with the Me Too movement, I think the song resonated in ways. So I think, you know, as we've all seen throughout our careers, that timing can be everything. And I think in many ways, the timing of this song was kind of perfect in the marketplace, which helped her set her apart from other developing pop artists.
Song that I think really stands out, maybe even more for her, is what she did on Saturday Night Live, Homesick, the ballad, because people can hear No Rules, they'll hear the lyrics, they'll hear the interesting production, but a song like that, number one, has a great hook, but really shows what a great vocalist she is. I don't know what your plans are further for that song, but it just shows a whole other side of her and really her, how strong a singer she is.
Yeah, you know, that was a very strategic and I can tell you well-debated strategy inside of the company and with Dua and management and the UK as to, you know, Saturday Night Live is obviously a still a significant pop culture moment. And I think it would have made a lot of sense in many ways for her to roll right out there and to do the second single,
yeah.
Which we were just ramping up. But to the things that you said were exactly what we were hoping to get across, is that Dua is a true talent and has a great voice and it has a real presence to her. And taking a bit of a calculated risk and putting her on to do that second song versus another big pop song, I think was something that ended up being the right decision in that moment because it seemed to really resonate with people. And it's been a song that has found all kinds of nice traction. Chris Martin is actually a guest on the song on the album, so the audio version of it includes Chris, and the song's had a very nice kind of organic run, and the UK used it around the holidays a little bit, but it's a special song for a special artist.
And opening for more shows coming up this year for Bruno Mars, that probably will help her profile a little bit, opening for Bruno Mars.
Yeah, never hurts. You know, Bruno was kind enough to take her out, especially here in the U.S. at a very kind of critical time for us. She spent all of September here in the States opening for Bruno on his arena tour. And, you know, that was about 2 months into the video being out, but we were really just getting started at radio in that window, and it was provided a huge opportunity for us to be able to take, you know, programmers and partners out alike to be able to go out and see that this was something very real, and the timing of it really could not have been better with Bruno. So it's great to see that he's continuing to take her out. You know, the exciting part is that she's selling tickets on her own out here in the U.S. She just finished up a second leg of her her U.S. tour, and she did two shows here in Los Angeles at the Palladium. It was over 7,000 tickets sold in two nights. So there's not a lot of young, up-and-coming pop stars that are selling 7,000 tickets in Los Angeles these days. So she just announced another leg of it in June this year, and we'll be crisscrossing the country again. So it's going to continue to be an important piece of our plan as we continue to turn her into a global superstar.
Now, for a situation like this, when you were talking about, you know, there were some songs that you guys released at first that weren't, you know, maybe catching on at radio quite in the same way, then you strike gold, you know, with these later singles on the album. Now, you know, what's the next step for her? Do you try and rework some of the original songs? We've seen that kind of work for some artists like Post Malone, when fans have gone back and rediscovered a few songs that from the debut album that they had missed the first time. Do you try and get new material while she's hot with these new couple of songs? Where do you go when, you know, you catch on sort of later in the album cycle and to keep that star going forward?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question, and it's really an amazing problem to be faced with. You know, because outside of the U.S., those songs that we didn't have a lot of success with, whether it was Blow Your Mind or Be the One, they had been, you know, very successful in other territories, and especially on the streaming platforms around the globe. So, you know, I think there's some validity to that conversation in terms of, you know, do you go back and work one or two of those songs that we believe so strongly in the early days, or is it really better to get her in the studio and, you know, get her working on new material? I think ultimately that's the direction we're going to go, but it's still something that as we just get into the next song, IDGAF, something that we'll continue to weigh as we move through that single and see where that leads us. But it's amazing to have options. I can tell you that. It's not always the case, so the fact that we potentially could look backwards or continue to look forward is a nice problem to have.
Yeah, I mean, definitely you have, you know, plenty of time, no urgency to it, but I just figured it was kind of an interesting setup that you haven't seen in a while from some of these big artists.
Yeah, certainly, and not something we've seen at Warner Brothers in recent years either, so it again is an exciting challenge that faces us.
Someday soon your whole life's gonna change. You'll miss the magic of these good old days.
I was thinking about the band. I was thinking about the fans. We were underground, loading merch in that 12-passenger van in a small club.
We won't keep you too much longer, Mike, but just talk about a couple more acts that are doing really well for Warner Brothers right now. On the rap side, heard in the top 10 this week at number 5, Blockboy JB featuring Drake and Look Alive. And also Macklemore doing really well at pop radio, especially a couple top 20 hits from the latest album, Good Old Days, just about to hit the top 10, it looks like, at top 40 radio. So you guys are kind of hitting a lot of different sounds.
Coming up with the Blockboy JB, can you, you know, detail for those who may not know, what is the Blockboy JB connection with Drake? Did Drake, you know, find him? How did they come to work together on this song?
Yeah, you know, it comes to us through our label partner OVO Sound, which is Drake's label. It's a label deal that we've had for several years at Warner Brothers. I think going back to 2013 or maybe even a little bit earlier than that, and has brought us great artists like Division and Majid Jordan and Roy Woods. And what was interesting about this is, you know, obviously Drake is signed to the Universal family of labels over there, and we don't necessarily get Drake songs. He tends to feature on some of his artists that are on his OVO Sounds label. But this one was unique and interesting in the way that it came to us, because this artist has had quite a bit of buzz building and coming out of Memphis. And Drake just kind of came across it organically from what we've been told, and really liked the track and figured he would try to get on it. So that's exactly what he did. You know, if Drake calls you, you pretty much say yes, I think is how it goes these days. And Blockboy wisely agreed. And, you know, it happened all very quickly. It was literally within a couple of weeks that Drake and Blockboy connected. And before you know it, we had a kind of a new track that had been kicking around. You know, the Blockboy version without Drake had been moving around the kind of the Southeast for you know, since the end of last year, and there was a dance that was affiliated with it, and, you know, putting Drake on it just was obviously the right bit of magic that that the song needed to be able to go to the next level. And the thing has just been a rocket ship ride. I mean, obviously everything touched Drake, everything Drake touches in the streaming world is just absolutely fire. So it's amazing to see this song with this artist moved up so quickly and sitting inside of the top five of the Hot 100 already.
And now you look 5 years later for Macklemore after those first two huge hits in 2013. He's become almost a veteran, a legacy artist, a top 40 at this point. Song Good Old Days doing really well with Kesha.
What's interesting about this is really just good old-fashioned radio promotion at its finest. Our radio team has been involved with the Macklemore project going back to those early days of the biggest hits with Thrift Shop and the others that came after it. And, you know, Macklemore, you know, he released a record in between this that didn't do as well and seemed to like a little bit of that sophomore curse that some artists have come across. But to his credit and to the team around it, primarily the radio team, they knew that they had a couple of special songs on this project, and they were just going to take no for an answer. And to Macklemore's credit, he's done a lot of the legwork, too. Before the album and the songs came out, he was crisscrossing the country and meeting with programmers and fans and doing the things that he knew he was going to need to do to kind of get back into the kind of mainstream pop culture consciousness. And here we are with Good Old Days sitting at number 13, and him and Kesha are going to go out and co-headline an arena tour this summer, and things are looking pretty great in the Macklemore business.
I got to ask, when it comes to an artist like Macklemore, who obviously you have this massive first album, you know, you get, there's the flack, there's the backlash about the Grammy Awards and does he deserve it, and where's his place in the culture? From your point of view and your job, how did those situations and conversations when you go for the next album or next attempt, how does that shape how you position him, how you can market him, how you work with the records?
Yeah, you know, again, this one's interesting. Macklemore is a fiercely independent artist and works through the kind of independent arm of the Warner Music Group. But he's also savvy and smart enough to know that he should pull in the help where he can get it, which is why our Warner Brothers radio promo team has been involved with him since day one. But I think, you know, that conversation in general is always is a great task. And you see it with other artists, I think, of actually Imagine Dragons quite recently as well, that their second record didn't do as well, and the third one you know, has now kind of brought them back to the forefront of people's minds, and that's what we're seeing with Macklemore here. But, you know, this sounds a little cliche, but it is so true in so many ways. It ultimately comes back to the A&R and the quality of the music, and artists that are focused and honest with themselves that something didn't connect the first time around and really focus on creating art that will connect the second time around, it makes all those conversations in conference rooms that much easier. Because as soon as you know you've got something special, the attitude and the bullishness that comes from the team to go out and kind of knock down every door and not to take any no, it just becomes that much easier, because you know that the art is great and that the artist is special, and it's something that people need to hear.
And as much as I had those two number ones to start, I feel like maybe long term, people might always come back to Same Love as maybe the most important song he'll ever put out.
Yeah, and to be in, you know, to be in the audience when he performs that, even to this day, it's such a special song. And again, in a similar way to what we were referring to with Dua, I mean, the timing of that song was so perfect, you know, in the culture of what was happening in the United States and around the world. And I think it helped elevate an already amazing song to just a kind of an iconic level. And again, to see him perform it live, even to this day, is a really, really special moment to be in an audience when it's happening.
Same time.
All right. Anything else in the pipeline, Mike, at Warner Brothers? New releases, new artists that you're already preparing a space on the wall for future people who are going to be framed?
Next to Prince.
Yeah, we got a couple of them. We're pretty excited. You know, we've got this new track from Marshmello and Anne Marie. Now, Marshmello is obviously an independent artist and continues to find quite a bit of success, especially in the streaming world. But Anne Marie is a UK-based artist that we're really excited about, and we'll be releasing her debut album at the end of April. This single right now, a song called Friends, debuted at number 29 on the top 40 last week, and looks like it's going to make another leap this week, maybe inside of the top 20. But it's a big song. It sounds like a big song. The video is great, and it's going to be an incredible kind of launching pad for Anne Marie as a solo artist here in the United States. And the great thing for her is she's been announced outside of the United States. She's going to be opening the Ed Sheeran kind of global stadium tour that kicks off in May and runs through the summer. So really a great position for her to be in. But this track, Friends, is going to be something where we'll definitely be clearing space on the wall for a new platinum plaque. That one's pretty exciting. And that's been out for just a couple weeks now, too.
Yeah, I've seen on global Spotify, it's really, I mean, solidly in the top 10. Obviously, yep. Doing really well in the UK. And I noticed on the US that it's, again, I mean, one of those things whenever there's a pop song, you know, moving up the US Spotify charts, that's always a good indicator. And you know something special because most pop songs just can't get to that top space. But it seems like that one is moving up quickly.
Yeah, it's really exciting to see it. I mean, obviously, it doesn't hurt to have Marshmello on that track, but with his global footprint. But it is—it's amazing to see how quickly it has moved. And to your point, sitting inside of the top 10 at on the global Spotify chart is an exciting thing to see, because it's tough to get some of these pop songs up past all of these monster hip hop and rap songs. So it's got a lot of promise, and we're really excited about that track. And then another artist that we're really excited about is a Bay Area female rapper by the name of Sweetie. Her song Icy Girl was kind of a bit of a viral phenomenon at the end of 2017, and we've got into partnership with her in January this year, and we're really just starting to ramp up the work on this track Icy Girl, and went to Urban Radio last week, where it was the number 2 most added track, and we're getting ready for her first kind of debut EP with some new music in the marketplace. But it's amazing to see the effect she's having with this song on kind of in the social space, where lots of people are posting videos of themselves singing it, and the reaction to her on Instagram and the amount of followers she has been great. But this track, Sweetie and Icy Girl, is going to be really something.
All right, Mike, congratulations on all the success that Warner Brothers is having. Things continue to go great. So thank you so much for coming on the Billboard Sharpie podcast.
I really appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
All you want. Your time is up. I'll tell you why. You say I'm sorry. Way too late now. So save it. Get gone. Shut up. When my best friend caught you creep.
Little piece of new Dua Lipa. That's IDGAF radio edit on that song. But new music from her. You know, I thought of afterwards, Trevor, we should have said this to Mike, our guest. I think I figured out one of the secrets to why Warner Brothers is doing so well right now.
Okay.
Artists of Albanian descent. Both Bebe Rexha and Dua Lipa have Albanian heritage.
Albanians, what's hot right now? Go out and get you an Albanian. That'll, you know, up your stock too.
Thank you, Wikipedia.
All right, and to wrap things up this week, we are going to flash back 25 years to the peak of the Disney Renaissance at least if you're looking at the Hot 100, when the animated film Aladdin came out in 1992, everyone knows the stellar song A Whole New World, the Oscar-winning A Whole New World, and it actually went all the way to number one on the Hot 100. Not the cartoon version, that would be sung by Brad Kane and Lea Salonga's Aladdin and Jasmine, but the official pop remake done by the dynamic duo of Peebo Bryson and Regina Bell, hitting number one on the Hot 100 this week, 25 years ago, back in 1993.
Did that knock out a certain song that had been number one for quite a while?
It did. Impressively, this was the song that finally toppled, or if you're me, regrettably, Whitney Houston's I Will Always Love You, which had been number one for the previous 14 weeks. And at the time, that was the chart record for the most weeks at number one by any song in Hot 100 history. So I'm pretty sure, I mean, I'm sure people were really, you know, by people, of course, I mean the people who worked here and chart fans and Whitney fans were probably wondering, you know, what song would eventually do it. There have been a couple songs, you know, challenging in that number two spot. But I don't think anybody would have pegged A Whole New World when it came out to be, you know, the giant killer that it became.
Well, I'm just impressed that you can put your I know how you feel about Whitney. If you can celebrate that this song knocked her out of number one, that's big of you.
Well, I mean, that's a great song. Honestly, I'm sure everyone has probably seen Aladdin, knows the song. You know, I think it's impressive that you can just do such a great justice to a song. And Peebo and Regina, obviously great vocalists in their own right. But with Aladdin really representing the high point of that Disney Renaissance, which is that period that people assign to sort of from The Little Mermaid through Tarzan.
Right.
When Disney's animated films just came back, and there's almost one at least every year, every other year, and they were just hits after hits after hits. During that period, a lot of the songs were big Hot 100 hits, so I just want to recap a few of those and some of the pop versions that got really high on the chart. Well, obviously, as we were talking about, A Whole New World hitting number one at the beginning of 1993. The year before that, the theme song and title song of Beauty and the Beast hit number nine on the Hot 100, as done by Peebo Bryson, so he's a pulling up two top tens just thanks to those Disney songs. That time he was joined by a pretty new vocalist to the American audiences by the name of Celine Dion. Our intern Megan just had a great reaction to that. Big Celine Dion fan.
Is this your childhood, Meg? Or I guess you probably weren't born at this point, but I'm assuming you've watched all these movies.
I was born at that time. This is my entire childhood that you're talking about.
Okay. That song, also a nice Oscar winner. One of Celine's, you know, first really big hits on stateside. She actually would go on to have, of course, four number ones, sell zillions of albums worldwide, but one of the very first times that American audiences really got a great grasp of her vocal talent. Following up from Aladdin, another monster hit for Disney in 1994, and probably the most beloved film of this Disney Renaissance era, that would be The Lion King. Sir Elton John taking on some big, big songs with that one, including Can You Feel the Love Tonight, which was a number four hit on the Hot 100 in 1994. And he also got another top 20 hit that year with Circle of Life. So Elton John really bringing home some Lion King glory.
Hear what duo might be remaking that next year?
Yeah, well, I was gonna say, and of course we'll potentially see some more Lion King action on the charts next year, 2019, with the live action remake. And if you have not heard by now, please A, move from under the rock that you are currently paying rent towards, because Childish Gambino, Donald Glover, will be playing Simba, and we've got the one, the only Beyonce Knowles Carter as Nala. So we might be able to hear a little Can You Feel the Love Tonight, and I don't want to hear... Gary's gonna.
There's only one reason I've brought this.
Gary's gonna bring up this amazing pun that he hopes that they somehow credit the song towards, or at least he can revive it because of Destiny's Child, which we know Beyonce from, Childish Gambino, hashtag Destiny's Childish Gambino.
Thank you.
No one make that trend, please. A few other big Hot 100 hits from the Disney Renaissance era in the 90s. We're talking Colors of the Wind from Pocahontas, done by former Miss America and star in her own right, Vanessa Williams. She had a number one hit a couple years before with Save the Best for Last. This time, Colors of the Wind getting to number four on the Hot 100. Flash forward a year from Pocahontas in 1996. We've got another top 40 hit from All for One, on the Hunchback of Notre Dame. The song is Someday and Keep It Going in 1997. Hercules. We've got Go the Distance as done by Michael Bolton hitting number 24.
Yeah, he actually hadn't had. He'd been so huge in the early 90s, but it was kind of a little comeback hit for him at that point. Again, thanks to a nice assist by Disney.
Disney not only reviving careers, Disney starting to make careers as well. If you move ahead one more year, 1998, we're going to talk about Mulan. The song was not a Hot 100 hit, but as we all probably know very well by now, the song Reflection, as featured in Mulan, done by a brand new face to the scene, Christina Aguilera. The song was a top 20 hit on the Adult Contemporary chart. And of course, you know, I got to throw my Whitney Houston connection here. Behind the scenes, there's a song, there's a high E in Reflection that Christina Aguilera has to sing. And for her audition piece to prove that she could hit that note, she sang Whitney Houston's Run to You from The Bodyguard, which has that same note. So there's Whitney making Christina help. Whitney literally helped Christina become a Billboard charting artist.
And you literally know every note Whitney Houston has ever sung.
Well, she can sing them all, so of course. If you know a note, Whitney can sing it. A few others kind of ending out the Renaissance period for the animated films. Tarzan, 1999. You'll Be in My Heart by Phil Collins. Was a number one hit for 19 weeks on the Adult Contemporary chart, so a really big hit there. And of course, you know, Phil had been such a monster star in the 80s. I mean, to see him get a hit at the turn of the century, like this, massive accomplishment for him.
People might not even know, although so many people do know the soundtrack, but there's the other good songs, original songs that Phil Collins did for that movie too. Strangers Like Me was a top 10 AC hit, Two Worlds, Son of Man, other great songs from that.
Now, after 99, this renaissance kind of comes to a close for Disney. Animated movies start kind of missing a little bit, not quite having the same kind of impact. But in the past couple of years, we've seen some of these animated films revive and particularly do really well on the charts. I'm sure any parent out there will cringe when I say the word Frozen from a few years ago back in the top of 2014. Of course, the song Let It Go, just inescapable in pop culture, and the version done by Idina Menzel. So actually not the pop version, which was done by Demi Lovato, but really the version that you hear in the movie as sung by Idina Menzel, a number 5 hit on the Hot 100. Huge win for her.
I'm never going back.
And just in the past about 18 months, we've seen the Moana soundtrack also do some nice things on the chart. The song How Far I'll Go just missing out on the top 40 in the Hot 100 with number 41. We've got Dwayne The Rock Johnson becoming a Billboard Hot 100 charting artist with the song You're Welcome at number 65 as well. So we could be entering a new period for Disney with some of these, you know, especially with Lin-Manuel and some of these great curators on these soundtracks. Definitely will be some things to look out for in the next couple of years.
All right. Well, that's this week's Billboard Sharpie podcast. We're back next week. We're going to be on a two-part special next week on American Idol. It's coming back. So next week, really excited to have 2011 American Idol champ Scotty McCrary is going to be our special guest. Just got his first number one country airplay hit this week with the song Five More Minutes. He's going to be our guest along with label executive Norbert Nix of Triple Tigers Records. Both interviewed together by our Nashville correspondent, Jim Asker. He's been on the podcast several times before. So Scotty's going to be our guest. And then the following week, we're going to recap the first episode, because he'll be back by then, of the rebooted Idol, premiering March 11th, now on ABC. And it's all going to be a part of the countdown we're going to do related to Idol over the next couple of weeks.
Of course, we'll also keep an eye on the present, what's happening on the Hot 100. In particular, if Post Malone makes any big splash on the Hot 100, we'll be sure to cover that as well. I know as we maybe get closer to the album release, there's some tour dates coming up, so there seems to be something moving in the wheelhouse of Post Malone. Again, we see how big the streams could be, the sales as well, so we'll keep that covered and see if he can be the one to challenge Drake. And to bring us home this week, we talked so much about some of these big hits from the Disney Renaissance. One film that's a major part of that canon that unfortunately does not really have any chart representation because it was the first, and if you're the first, I guess you kind of lose out, is 1989's classic The Little Mermaid. So to end with that, we're going to bring out one of the biggest hits of The Little Mermaid, a song everybody knows. Here is the Academy Award winning Under the Sea, or as Sebastian might say, Under the Sea.
Under the sea, under the sea. Darling, it's better down where it's wetter. Take it from me. Up on the shore, they work all day. Out in the sun, they slave away. While the devoting full time, floating under the sea.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.